All right. So this situation with David and his effusive expression of emotion leads right into this text here. I really struggled with what to use as a focal point with this section. It's so easy for us to just be so familiar with this that we just go to what we know. We fix our eyes on this fellow David, whom we have heard from, and he's sort of a hero to all the people. It's it's really a straightforward passage. You know, David comes from work. He decides to send his people to war instead of going himself. And he lays down on his couch. By the way, couch potatoes existed, you know, back then. Did you hear that right? Right? So it's nothing new. And guess what happened when he was in his couch? He gets in trouble. He gets in trouble, because he wanders about, and we all know the rest of the story. You see, that's where the title dereliction of duty comes from. He should have been at war. He should have been doing what he's supposed to, but no, he decided to stay home and slouch. So he doesn't only commit adultery, but he orders the husband's murder. But again, that's nothing that we have not seen on TV, right? Netflix and you, whatever it is, Hulu and all these. That's all over the place nowadays. We know about this. This is common. But there's more to that story. See, there's Bathsheba. And she sometimes becomes like a secondary character in the whole story. It's like she's basically there to support the narrative of the king. But what if she was the main character in this account? What if the story was really about her? The woman that is in between, caught in between what she is supposed to be doing and religiously, what she's supposed to be doing for her husband, and then the power that the king exerts upon her life. I think that you all are aware that men have power, especially if they're the king, right? And if it was a queen, I would say women have power, right? Right? Because there's power with positions. Now, I think that this is more like perceived power, and I say perceived power because the way that the narrative is told from the male's perspective. It's sort of this is what's happening with the king, and anything else is outside of that. But in this case, I think that those things that are perceived from our normal perspective needs to be reevaluated. I'm talking about how men see things need to be on check. David is the king, we know that. He's taken many wives. Well, you aware of that? Well, that's news. He's taken many wives. She's had many kids. And then there's this one more, right? So what's different with that? What's up with that? What's wrong? I mean, we know that this is not the first time. And of course, this is a beautiful woman, we're told, right? So, it makes sense, doesn't it? And last week I spoke a little bit about testosterone, right? And me needing more testosterone around me, being the fact that I live among women in my house. But if this is testosterone, I really have my questions. I cannot see how Bathsheba is just a supporting character in this story. I think, as a matter of fact, that she's the point. Now, we live in a culture that is dismissing the value of human beings in general. We live in a culture that is just suppressing the value of the lesser one, or those who are disadvantaged, but more so of women. And men, I gotta say, we're becoming more and more self-absorbed. And I'm not talking about you all men, Mount Air, I know you, right? But still. It's one of those dynamics that it keeps perpetuating itself. And perhaps it is the fault of the feminist movement, right? Let's blame it on, right? What? I see the heads right now. I don't know. Well, this is what's happening. Even with a feminist movement, and I don't speak against the feminist movement. My mom is a minister. You know that, right? Yeah, and she's fought for the right to be recognized for years, okay? Until she was ordained, and when she was 72, after working 50 years in the ministry. No, I'm not saying anything about that. I'm just saying that sometimes the reality is that even with all these movements, something tends to kick back. Men, perhaps seeing the threat of all this, have reacted even subconsciously. And I think it's a matter of competition. And I think I'm going to get in trouble with this as well. But here it is. Here it is. The abuse of power is rampant. Right? It's rampant. And perhaps it's more visible now with the Me Too movement, because it's out there in the news all over the place. But I don't think that that's just my opinion. I think it's the reality of a world that is confused. I think it's the reality of a world that has gone through extremes. Ever since the 60s, there has been this phenomenon growing through the land and basically exponentially being amplified with the advent of the internet. Listen to this quote from an article titled, "Now We Know What Porn Does to Our Kids." This is from April last year, by James Emery White, and says, "Generation Z is the first generation to grow up surrounded by the now ubiquitous nature of porn. No other generation has had pornography so available in such degrees at a such young age. 70% of all 18 to 34-year-olds are regular viewers. The average age to begin viewing, 11. And that age is continually skewing downward. It's been called the wallpaper of their lives. And David started it. I know he did. It's right there. Imagine, what's the world going to be like now? You see, in this story, in this section of scripture, what was a religious ritual, a religiously sanctioned ritual for a female person wanting to worship, meaning that she had to go through that cleansing ritual of washing herself of the menstrual cycle, became a pornographic event to David because he was slacking. Now, he had not gotten off of his couch, taken a stroll on the roof, and voila, it happened, right? The formula was completed. Now, this is the title of another article I read, and again, this is from February of last year. Virginia and South Dakota legislatures acknowledge porn as public, as a public health crisis. In it, it says, the National Center of Sexual Exploitation has announced that Virginia and South Dakota passed resolutions which draw attention to the harmful effects of porn. The resolution, similar to the one passed in Utah last year, acknowledged the negative effects of pornography has on a public scale. And it goes on to state this. Among these problems, the resolution states that porn does the following. Check it out. Leads to low self-esteem and eating disorders. Lead to increased problematic sexual activity at younger ages and an increased desire to engage in risky sexual behavior as young adolescents. It often serves as children and youth sex education and shapes their sexual templates. Generally teaches girls that they are to be used and generally teaches boys to be users. And it normalizes violence against and abuse of women and children. Increases the demand for sex trafficking, prostitution, child abuse, sexual abuse, and child pornography. I mean, these are just a few of the ones that are named. Now, there's this term. 3 minutes. Brother Ron, 3 minutes. It's an inside joke. Okay. There's this term that I had not heard truly until recently. Misogyny. Y'all know it? You've heard misogyny? I didn't know about this until probably a few years ago. And now it's like part of the lingo. It's like everybody's talking about it. You know, Me Too movements. Sex slavery in our cities. Abuse against women in so many ways. The reality of our lives doesn't come from reality TV, but from real struggles that are there in the streets today. Now, Bathsheba was abused and then victimized again with the murder of her husband, and then victimized again when she conceives a child. That creates all kinds of social problems. Now, of course, you know, we live in a Christian bubble. Don't you think? Well, not anymore, but at least we assume that we do. And I know that even in the news, many leaders of churches and many people have come out and accepted that they have struggled with some of these issues. And if there's a redeeming action in this whole scenario, It is written in the Psalms 51 and 32. I think that there's a good message for us, although really looking at it honestly, it doesn't make it right for the victim. But here's what David writes. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love. According to your great compassion, blot out my transgressions. Wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. Psalm 32, 5 says, and then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. This tells me something about David. He knew that he could come clean with God if he wanted to have a transparent relationship with him. Again, I don't think it does much for the victim because the damage has been done. But if there is any redeeming quality to this scenario, to this situation, it is that God is always loving. And that God's love transcends even the disasters that we can create in our lives. Now, what's the moral of the story? In a world that is full of confusing messages about our behavior, about the treatment of women, about minorities, about people throughout the sexual orientation spectrum, and abuse in all of human spheres, slavery, sexual slavery, and all these. Maybe going to war is better than staying in the couch. And I'm not advocating for war either. But maybe there is something that it says about us, men, and yes, also women, who may be in situations of power, may be in positions that may take advantage of the other and abuse. And I say, yes, women, because it is not only men that abuse their position. Do you agree? Yeah. I've experienced that more than once. So, in this whole scenario, by the way, the thing about the couch, you know, and not staying on the couch, that was a joke, guys. You know, I was supposed for you to catch it. But I guess I was too serious for you to hold on to that. But in reality, maybe this is one of the things that this story lifts us for us. Need to be aware where we are, how we interact with the world around us, and how to protect those who can be vulnerable. The challenge is that with a world that is so full of messages coming to us from everywhere, right? And everyone in the millennial world that we live needs to have their own opinion, and you can't say nowadays that they're wrong, right? Because you'll be seen as getting in their face. It is so much more difficult to have a message to the world about what the gospel is all about, what love is all about, what caring for the other is about, what having respect for the other is about, what restraining yourself in your actions is about. It is very hard, very difficult. And even if schools are doing that effort, then it's going haywire. So the challenge is not simple. The challenge is not easy. But still, we do have a light. Still, we do have a God. Still, we do have someone that loves us. So, church, it is for us. It is for us to lift up that love in whatever way we can. And that's where we need the Holy Spirit to really lead us in this effort, so that we can champion what this Lord really stands for and about. I'd like for us to sing a very well-known hymn.